Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. I'm John Montgomery, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, my friend?
Good, good. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. A bit jet-lagged, but happy from last week's FMX.
Yeah, I'm the exact opposite. I'm well-rested and just... I mean, I say I'm the opposite. I'm also in a good mood, but I'm well rested.
He is ornery and cantankerous after a nice holiday week down under, Easter and ANZAC. Not to get in a rat hole, but what is ANZAC off the top? Someone asked me that.
It's literally like our kind of, I think it's your Memorial Day. It's the day that we tend to honor those who have fought in wars, and it comes from Australia and New Zealand fighting and being heavily defeated at Gallipoli. The English were also suffered tremendously, but it was a loss that resonated very strongly with Australians because they had such heavy losses. And so that day of massive losses became a good day to remember those that fight. And I must say, I appreciate that we're not celebrating some victory of killing a lot of other people. That would be a kind of a bit distasteful. So, in fact, over the years, it's actually grown in popularity in this country, and that it's not a kind of rah-rah day. It's a very much a remembrance day, and that's a public holiday. It happens to also be the day after my birthday, so whenever I go out to, and have a night on the town, I can always have a day off the day after.
You know, and I actually set an alarm so that I could be the first to tweet or post happy birthday to you.
Even though I was having my birthday in the future.
You were, yes, as a matter of fact. So, anyway, hey, first off, great seeing everyone, and I know many of you from talking to you, great seeing everyone at FMX, all our FX PhD members. I related the hellos to Mike as well, because I know many of you actually want to give my regards to Mike. But it was really great seeing everyone, and Mike and I have talked, and you guys mentioned that I tend to favor our European. I don't favor our European members. I think that's the wrong way of putting it. Our European members are... very supportive and come out to all the events and great from a networking standpoint. And that certainly showed through at FMX this year, because a large number of you came up to say hello, as well as hung out in some of the evenings over beers or at, say, the Arnold event or some other thing. So it was great seeing everyone. But once again, a really fantastic conference, and one that Mike just seems to be getting bigger every year, maybe not necessarily adding things in visual effects, but expanding what they're covering as part of the conference.
Oh, you mean moving from just sort of like movies to games and stuff?
Well, yeah, movie and games, but even to things like interactive exhibits. We wrote up, I don't know, I have this thing about when I go to conferences to try and check out some stuff that's a little bit off our radar.
Great.
And generally, you know, happily, you know, happy that did so. And I went to a presentation that I wrote up in the FX Guide article, I think it was day two, about some live interactive events. And I thought especially Jeff would be, especially like being such a fan of Disney. But there are actually parallels between, believe it or not, between live interactive storytelling and linear storytelling, or more linear storytelling in movies and things like that. So it was quite interesting. But that's the kind of stuff they're adding to the event, in addition to some of those presentations on film, and also a nice manufacturer presence from all-day sessions, effectively an all-day stream from the folks at Side Effects in Houdini. Jeff Wagner was there, and we actually talked to him in a little video clip we'll be sharing on Effects Guide. Seth Autodesk had their own room, but also places like Maxon, Adobe, and even Red Giant had presentations. So really a fairly solid conference top to bottom. I guess the only thing, and Mike and I talked about it before we left, is that, you know, we've had such great coverage at FX PhD that there were frankly several sessions that I might feel ordinarily conflicted had I not seen them before, but some of the presentations were actually from Seagraph, even from last year, so it was a little fewer conflicts for me to get to personally. All in all, a great event.
Yeah, I haven't been to FMX. I obviously watch it from afar. It's easier for you to go than me. But I generally like any conference that has good presentations, as opposed to just a kind of a trade showy kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was that. I guess the only amusing session, if you would, and I really didn't expect a lot from it, I guess, was Andy Serkis's presentation, which, you know, for the FMX folks, was a big deal because at FMX, they really haven't had that star power there before. Stars mm-hmm. in the visual effects field, of course, with people like John Knoll coming and you know, Douglas Trumbull. So, you know, very big stars from our field, but I'm talking on the screen. And so this is the first time that they've had anyone like that come in. He came to actually present some of the work that's been done on the next Planet of the Apes. And I got to say, it looks really amazing. But, you know, the session, and that, you know, cast in the best possible light, it was basically revealing some of the same clips that were revealed, the week earlier before. Basically showed five clips from the movie. But it does give you an idea of the kind of improvements in the techniques at Weta. I mean, this stuff just looks amazing to me. But it's more of a story, information about the storyline, of course, that more than any of the technical details and things like that. That will, of course, be coming an effects guide after the film is released, but I guess not the time to talk about that now. But the funniest part is they had, you know, they sent out email to everyone attending the event that no electronic devices of any kind were going to be allowed, right? So no phones, because everything's got a camera recording ability now, so you might as well block out computers, iPads, phones, you know, basically any type of electronic equipment. But not only did that, you had to check that at the door, and they made you do that, but they even had metal detectors at the entrance to make sure that you weren't trying to slip something through, which, again, the first time that I've ever had to go through a metal detector at a conference. Getting to the conference, yes, but at the actual conference, I found, you know, I understand it's important, but I didn't even think what they were showing was all that, you know, it would have been, I didn't think they would have been too hurtful if that information got out or that information was shown or anything like that. But, you know, they have their reasons, I guess, for doing so at the studios. And if it allows us to kind of see those things and gain some insights, then, well, you know, who am I to complain about it?
Did you think it looked noticeably different from the first film? In other words, not there was anything wrong with the first film, but, you know, a couple of years gone by, a bit of tech's gone by. Did the
I thought nuances of performance were pretty interesting. I thought that that was interesting. The side-by-side, they showed several side-by-sides, I guess, between original capture and finals, kind of as they did before. And, you know, I mean, it's hard because, you know, you're really looking at the scenes quickly and projection is not necessarily ideal. It's HD, but I don't think it's markedly different, but it is an improvement, I will say, in what they do, and especially probably the scale in which they dealt with shooting and filming principal photography out in the wild, so to speak, in the, you know, the rainforest, as I said, in Vancouver, as well as New Orleans. You know, this was really very much an on-location shoot, which I think previously was not quite so prevalent in the original Apes film that Weta did.
I had a really interesting chat that we'll be publishing with Jerome Chen, who's the VFX super of Spider-Man. And in that, we obviously discuss the film, the new Spider-Man film, but in that we have a subsection, I guess, a rat hole, if you like, about the Uncanny Valley, where we discuss facial capture stuff, which I guess ties in with exactly what you're saying. And the point that Jerome made, which I think is something that most people are probably aware of, is we seem to be so good now at the rendering, and we're getting really great stills of people's faces. But the two points he said is that it really falls apart when they animate, when they move. And then the second one is he sort of lamented the fact that we seem to have really good animals, and he pointed to Planet of the Apes, really good apes. We have a lot of really good things that are not human, like yep. Gollum, that, you know. But he even wonders if there isn't something innately, you know, almost like to do with the soul, that stops us from responding and successfully producing something that's fully digital, but you can't pick from an actor as a straight up human performance. And it's an interesting sort of concept, really. Like, is it possible? Is there anything that is actually stopping us from completely crossing the uncanny valley? And at emotion level, is it just that we don't have the fidelity of capture and the translation between surface properties of someone doing something in front of a camera and what their underlying skin is? I mean, is this a problem that will be solved, or is it just a problem that we're going to struggle with for years
more?
It's
really fascinating, isn't it? And it's, you know, it's got to be largely due just to the fact that we are so obviously comfortable in, you know, seeing and interacting with other humans that we know exactly what it looks like. You know, it's just so much in our nature, so much in our daily life, that anything away from that, is going to seem not quite perfect. And you're so right about the rendering. Even this, Mike, some of the real time rendering stuff that's being done, the GPU that we've seen year over year at Seagraph, and faces and skin with subsurface scattering, that's even looking better and better, right? But the minute it moves, it belies it, right? It betrays it.
Yeah. It's interesting because we are modeling so accurately what light is doing when it goes under the skin and stuff, but to get the performance, it feels like we need to capture what the muscles are doing. What we capture is the skin on top of the muscles. And obviously there are facts and other stuff like facts that help us derive key facial poses to move between. But it is probably the most fascinating area of computer graphics to me.
Yeah, it is. And someone on that nature, I got after the session, there was some whinging from some people attending the session about Andy Serkis talking about how taking ownership and authorship of the performance on screen. And I actually feel as though it was a little bit, not taken out of context, but I mean, from his standpoint, it's got to be incredibly rewarding to see something that he works really hard on and feel that his performance and nuances of his performance are actually translated onto something non-human like an ape, right? And he certainly made multiple times during the presentation talked about the team at Weta and talked about the research they did and the value of the artists and recognize it and talking about, frankly, what they did between the films in translating his performance into something else. So he wasn't, I don't feel as though he was dismissing the work that's being done by those people. But rather for him, being an actor, it's actually got to be pretty amazing to see the technology improve, to see actually the animation getting better and better, whether that's, it's both motion capture and adaptation to the features of the ape from one movie to the next.
Yeah. He's got his own company now, though, hasn't he? He's got his own motion capture company. That's not to say that he's split from doing anything with the Weta team, but he actually... Because he's also directing, right? He's directing Animal Farm, is that right?
Yeah. And also, what was it else? I forget. But yeah, it's just an interesting aside of that. It's really easy and quick to, jump on some. I actually think that he does have a, he's obviously, into the technology as an actor, feels very strongly about having authorship of the performance, but I don't feel as though he's trying to minimize the contribution on the tech side because he's been around that process long enough to, I believe, understand what it takes.
Did you know that he's also in the new Star Wars film?
I did not know that, actually.
Yeah. So I don't know whether he's as a performance capture. Because he has actually acted as an actor.
Oh yeah,
So
on stage and
I think he did Ian Dury, didn't he? In Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll, or whatever that thing.
No,
I think
he was in some Shakespeare as well, though. But yeah, traditional, more traditional. But yeah, he has a broad background. So anyway, that was again interesting session, but amusing with the whole security aspect of things.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm glad that you got a chance. We had joked on this very podcast about you going to London, but you didn't actually go to London in the end, did you? But there is, in fact, or there was, in fact, depending on what time we're talking about, a meetup of PhD students, albeit without you.
Was there?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, from the forums.
I missed that.
It may be happening now, like literally this second, depending on our time zones, I think.
I must have marked all as red or something like that because I have the alerts set up in the forums, but I didn't see that. So,
yeah.
Yes, sadly unable to attend. But, actually by the end of the week, after spending time at a conference, you're there all day, you have dinner, the meetups at night or events at night, then going back to the hotel and trying to write or do my day job, keeping FX PhD stuff going on. I was frankly ready to come home, but looking forward to a trip to back to London later this year, hopefully. And we'll make that happen. We'll make that happen. So anyway, it was a great conference, and it was actually, again, good to get tips as well from the various members about what they saw and what they were interested in, and helping us actually, do a bit of, market research about FXPHD members. It's always valuable to talk to you guys in person regarding your thoughts about FXPHD. We obviously get a lot of emails, but sometimes just having those kind of free-form roundtable discussions without the electronic barrier of email in the way really helps kind of cut to the chase, so to speak, and you know, get to the heart of the issue. So it was really helpful and really appreciated when providing their perspective regarding that.
Now, last week we said if you had any questions for us, you should send them in, because we last week didn't do the podcast because you were at FMX and then you were sick. And I actually have a couple of questions. So are you ready for for questions? These are haven't had a chance to prepare for these, but yep. I don't think they... So somebody said...
you're setting me up? Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't ask them if I didn't think there was some generality to them.
Yeah.
So somebody signed up for 3 courses this term, you know, 3 plus obviously background. And they've decided, having viewed the stuff, that they're really only 2 courses that they really want to do. And they're at a bit of a loss over the third. And their question is, what happens if I don't pick a third?
I think the best thing for you to do would be just to write us and we'll refund the difference between those two if you don't pick the third. The other option is, if you join next term with a 2-course membership, we can easily just bump that course from this term to the next term. It's not something we want to do all the time, but we have no problem doing that for you if you want. The key is, you do not want to pick that third course. We need to have it clear that you have not picked and or downloaded the materials for the third course. And of course, we are able to track that kind of thing. So whatever you want to do.
The next question is, I'm a PhD member and I wanted to do some stuff for my showreel. Can I use some of the imagery from FX Guide?
Do you want to take that? No, absolutely not.
And I'm sorry, it's not us being... it's not us being bitchy. It's literally, we have very, very good relations with the studios, but that's built on the fact that we honor their terms and agreements. And those terms and agreements are that we get permission to run imagery and pictures for stories that we do. We don't have the rights to hand those on to anybody else. Now, to give you an idea what we're talking about, if you wanted to publish a book and put a still in the book from a film, then we know from firsthand experience that authors have had to pay up to $1,000 an image to do that. So we don't pay $1,000 an image, but we certainly don't have the rights to then hand over imagery. And I understand the point of the question, which is, well, I'm a paid member of PhD. Like, I'm not just somebody off the street. I'm, you know, genuinely part of the community. And we totally appreciate that. And if it's a photo that I've taken of John, I'm undoubtedly likely to give you permission. But normally those questions aren't about a photo.
I might charge you for it. But
there you go. But what they are normally about is something from... If this specifically said FX Guide, so I'm taking it's from a film or something like that. Now, there is footage, of course, that we give out inside FX PhD, and we deliberately shoot that and provide that so that you can use it and put it on your showreel. You don't have to watermark it. We don't want you to sell it to somebody else, but other than that, you're allowed to use it. But when it comes to stuff that we've got, that's a no-go. And I should also say, we've sort of built since 99 a pretty privileged position in our relationship with the studios. So while I'm completely sympathetic to someone's point of view, and you might think, oh, okay, well, then he might be willing to bend the rules, I so value what we can give to the community by publishing the sort of stuff that we do on FX Guide and having the kind of early access. And it's got to the point now, like it used to be, we used to get stuff as press releases. Now we get notification months ahead of things going public. And that relationship's really, really valuable for us being able to provide stuff both in FX Guide and FX PhD. And as you've probably seen in background this term and in other things, we do get some really original stuff. We just don't have the rights to hand it on. So it isn't us being fussy, and it isn't even us saying no with a nod and a wink. It's an absolute no on that one. I'm sorry about that.
My short answer is, it's not ours to give permission to you for. So
yeah.
But bottom line, it's just, you know, it's not ours. We don't
know.
Not
only that, if you were to do it and sort of say, I didn't think you meant that or something, it could really damage the rest of the community, which is something that we really don't want to see have happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the question. Have you got any emails, questions and stuff, or is it just me that's been getting these?
No, I haven't got any. I was actually just going to, I thought it was a good idea, actually. I was going to look through some questions on support. Because I do get tons of them, and that's actually our preferred contact point, because we get lots of, we can kind of keep track of them and make notice of them. One was someone who was asking about, why can't I take any Mari courses this term? And we've talked about it before on FX PhD, but the fact is that We have a fixed budget that we have to spend on courses and pay the profs each and every term. First we have to decide courses based upon that. But even that being said, in addition to that factor, we also have things like prof availability. Is the professor available and have time to actually ask questions in the forums, or answer questions, excuse me, in the forums for you guys? So that's an additional factor as well in determining whether or not a course runs. I also have to say we have such a great membership who joins term over term over term at FXPhD that we also in general like holding off a term between most of our new courses, just to kind of give it a break, get more new people in it the next time we run it as well. So those are, you know, at least three reasons off the top of my head why sometimes it seems sensible that we might just run all the courses all the time. But the reality is we're, you know, just really doesn't work out very well doing that. And we've really learned that actually over the, how many terms? 30. What are we on? I use background fundamentals. 20. I said 32, 23 yeah. terms that we've had. I use background fundamentals numbering system to know how many terms we've done. So, you know, I mean, we've just learned that over the years. And so that's kind of why that happens.
Yep. Yeah, it's absolutely the case. I mean, honestly, as John said, one of the greatest ways to get feedback from us is to send stuff to support. And it's not a black hole. It's not delegated. Somebody sent me a question, which I thought was kind of funny. They said, I was wondering if I could do X. I've asked support and they said no, but I thought I'd ask you. And I was like, but I am support. I mean, we are the same thing. Like it's not like there's a hierarchy here where, you know, you can go over support's head to us, because depending on who's doing what, you know, I could answer that question though through support, or John could, or so it's not like we're a big corporation with many departments and somebody's not got permission or authority to make decisions. Support is, you know, just a great way to get to us. But the reason you go through support, and John has articulated this before in the podcast, is it gets logged. And as it gets logged, we don't have the risk of what happens. And I swear it does happen that we lose emails.
Oh, we just ran into it today. Yeah.
Yep. And it's, you know, ghastly when it happens. But it's just between... So my emails, I have like about five accounts, and my five accounts funnel to one, which then funnels obviously to my Mac. And at various points, there are spam filters on all of that. But, you know, somebody in my office, Ian, said to me the other day, oh my God, I got up this morning, had 40 emails to answer. And I nearly choked on my coffee. I was like, only 40? It's like, so, you know, that's the risk you take. You send an email to us. And obviously we do try and do that. The same thing happens, of course, with... when you send a private message to us inside FXPhD, again, try and make sure we get to all of those. But, you know, it's hard sometimes to make sure that we do. But that's not the case with the support ones, because the support ones get logged, and so you can't lose it because someone's always looking at the support logs. And if there are things in the support log that haven't been answered, we immediately jump on those. So that's why we say that. It's not we're trying to deflect. It's not like we're too busy to deal with your stuff and we'll hand it over to somebody else in our Korean, Indian, or Chinese or English office that's going to, like, you know, run around and do that behind the scenes. It's just a more formal way of speaking to us that gets logged.
Yeah, we actually have little things that ping us if we don't answer it. So, like, if, you know, unlike the forums, I'm just lamenting the fact that I didn't see posts in the forums that disappeared, because that probably hit Mark all as red. But we have part of the support service provider that we use is it will actually ping us if we don't respond to something within a couple of days. And because, you know, sometimes when you think someone else is answering, or you think you answered it, you read it, but it didn't actually answer it. You know, all those things can happen in day to day when you're getting lots of support questions, because we actually get quite a few. It's, you know, questions from people who haven't joined, or just, you know, fairly people want access to the back classes or things like that. So... again, it's the best way to contact us. Hey, another question someone had, and I think it's something to bring up as well, that we do get early in the term, that, you know, someone maybe will pick a course before the first two classes have been done or something like that, pick a course and then go, well, you know what, this course really isn't for me. And they kind of always tentatively, you know, send an email into us, you know, I picked this, I haven't watched anything else. Can I change out of it? And I mean, really, it's not a problem at all. I mean, the bottom line is we want you to be happy, you know, especially at this point in a term. You know, we understand, and frankly, no one at FXPhD is trying to scam us, frankly, I don't think. But, you know, you try something out, you don't like it, you know, we're reasonable guys, you know. If you want to try something else, we'll kind of uncheck that course for you and let you pick something else. It's especially easy this this time in the term to do that for you. So, you know, it's really not a problem. We know sometimes it's not quite what you expected. We want you to be happy. That's our aim. We want you to learn and be happy at FX PhD.
Yeah, then one of the reasons we do the This Week in FX PhD podcast is because we figured if you guys can just hear us talking and, you know, kind of get a vibe as you would if we were at a real college or university where you got a chance to sort of hear and speak to people one-on-one, it just makes it easier for you to approach us, right? And you can literally say, I heard you guys talking in the podcast, I want to pick up on this point. It just makes it a bit more human. So there is no way in a distributed online environment like this that we can totally have a one-on-one type experience, but we figure this is a much better way that you can just get a feeling for what the organization's values are and what our kind of vibe is like. And so if you listen to this podcast, you'll get an idea what we think is cool and what we think is not, and hopefully that'll make it easier for you to just approach us, because we are, this is like a collective effectively. It's you guys. We only exist to support and help you guys, you know, with your careers.
And while Mike said, you know, we are support, frankly, Ryan is generally our front line and support, and he's far nicer than Mike and I anyway. So,
well, that is true. I didn't want to sound like, though, that there was a difference between us.
There's not. Support. Yeah, exactly. He speaks for us. And you know, he contacts us with questions, right? So we're all in this together. You know, it's not, it's very not much. I just want to make a joke about Ryan, but at your expense, yeah. Mike. But he really is a reasonable guy. And frankly, oftentimes pushes me to do things like, I think we should just do it. And I'm like, okay, fine, go ahead. So anyway, it's a little bit of our support roundtable. I like the idea of getting questions. So post in the forums or send us an email. Send me an email. I'm kind of disappointed I didn't get any emails.
Well, you were at this week.
Oh, unable to receive emails? No, I don't think so. No one just wanted to email me.
Weren't you sick? Weren't you making a phone call on the big white porcelain phone?
I got sick again. I call it trade show vomit syndrome or something like that. And the first day was really a bummer. Felt fine the rest of the week, but yeah. So anyway, send us your questions. It could be about anything, something you did, any question. We'll be happy to address it. Hey, one thing, Mike, a benefit that we just did for members yesterday. In the Sysadmin 202 course that's running right now, I actually do a little bit about web servers and remote Linux VPS cloud servers. And we utilize the Linode service, which I can't recommend more highly. Really fantastic service provider if you need to have a remote server. Well, they just basically, at no additional charge, gave us double the CPUs, as well as double the actually throughput out of our server. So the network bandwidth out of our server, as well as double the entire bandwidth we have for sending courses out. And I just did an upgrade to the logger.fxphd.com server, which is, because it's called Logger, it is based in the US, unlike the porter.fxphd that's based in the UK. I did a test before the upgrade from our FX Guide server, which has a really close connection to it, and was getting about 30 megabytes a minute. 30 megabytes a second. Excuse me.
It'd be better if it was a second.
30 megabytes a second. It took about 11 seconds to download the first class of background fundamentals. So that was pre-upgrade.
Yeah,
I posted on Twitter, said I'm going to upgrade, hit the upgrade button. 3 hours later, the upgrade was done. Did the same test again, 96 megabytes a second. It took 3 seconds to download the first class of background fundamentals. Now, admittedly, you're probably not going to get that at your location because it's going to traverse the ocean. It's going to traverse routers. If you pay the big bucks like Netflix, you can get preferred routing on Verizon and Comcast here in the States. That's not going to help you. But what that does mean is, in general, you'll have more reliable. We can handle more servers, more members at once, more downloads at once, and you will see speed. I actually saw an increase in speed at home as well. It wasn't quite significant, but 20 to 30% speed up. Not three times the speed up, but, you know, 30%, every little bit helps.
Sure. So can I buy more net neutrality from you?
Yeah, not from me. I don't know. I don't know where you buy that. Whatever, down there. That's...
Well, I have to get going, but yes. Obviously, it's as John said, terrific to hear from you in any form, in the forums and via support and via emails. And we certainly don't try and ignore any of those. But yeah, it is always really, really good to hear from members. And just in parting, and I do have to go, there is a great story on FX PhD's blog about one of our early FX PhD members and their experiences and, quite frankly, spectacularly great career since joining at FX PhD, which you really should check out. And yeah, if you want to see how far a Newt compositor can go from from joining our very first FX PhD term in 2006, that's a great story.
Yeah, it really is. Fun to actually share those success stories, as well as see many, several other artists actually in Europe this week who share a very similar story. But yeah, Mike, I know you've got to go. I need to get back and working as well. So we'll chat to you guys and gals next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.